Hello, my name's Paul Kleinerman. I'm a professor at Oxford and I'm the host of this podcast on immunology called To Immunity and Beyond. So this is just to say that what we're putting forward with the podcast is a scientific discussion, and it's really just for information, and it isn't in any way medical advice. So if it's medical advice you're after, please go and talk to your doctor or some other medical professional. Meanwhile, enjoy the podcast. Great. Well, hello and welcome to another episode of To Immunity and Beyond. And today I've got Sheena Cruikshank, who's at the University of Manchester. Welcome to the podcast, Sheena.
Hi, Paul.
Hi. And so we're going to talk a bit about MOXIE, or the MRC Centre for the Exposome, and your role in it. But first of all, perhaps you could just introduce yourself a little bit and, you know, how you got into this area and some of your ideas behind it.
So I'm an immunologist, like most of the people who are in the MRC core for exposome immunology. And I've been interested in the role of the environment in shaping immune responses for a little while now. One of the reasons I actually got into it was actually through my public engagement work. So when I started as a lecturer in the University of Manchester, I was quite centred on looking at things like Helminth infection. And I started working with non-native English speakers who were based here in the UK to learn about their experiences of infection and try and think about what I could do with my research that was relevant to their lives or to their relatives' lives. And through those conversations that I was having, it became very aware that they were very concerned about allergies, and this was something they were experiencing now they'd relocated to the UK, and they're very anxious about it. So we decided to develop a kind of research project to look into this, because obviously we knew about the ideas about, you know, the kind of old friends hypothesis and the role of the environment in shaping allergic reactions. But we were curious to see if we could get some data that kind of looked at some of the linkages, in particular thinking about things like pollutants. So what we did was we took a citizen science co-produced kind of approach, and we created an app that would capture allergy and asthma symptoms, but also location data. So the idea was people would be able to understand the symptoms better and manage them, but we would also be able to see if there were any links between symptom severity and environmental factors like pollution. And so we were able to produce some research that showed that there was really clear linkage between more severe and longer duration of symptoms in more polluted areas. And so then I wanted to start looking at kind of the mechanistic details of what was happening, and started really doing a very multidisciplinary work, working with environmental scientists, atmospheric scientists, to start to try and unpick this. So I've been in this kind of space, kind of learning about how to set these systems up for a few years now. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and it's absolutely fascinating. And all the way through, those communities have come with me, and they're very much a part of that research.
Great. I mean, that's a really brilliant introduction. And you're, I mean, I think in the papers that you've written, you sort of point out how integrated it has to be. These approaches can't be solved, you know, by just people in a lab with a hypothesis. You need all the bits around it, and I suppose that's part of the nice thing about the MRC core, isn't it, that the different angles on it. What do you, just for people who don't really know the field very well, what would you say was the best definition of an exposome, if you could kind of condense it down?
Well, I think we're very much condensing it down for the centre. So the exposome refers to the variety of factors, environmental and kind of personal factors that shape your immune system and shape your kind of life. So that can be pollution, it could be your microbiome, it could be your diet, it could be your infection history, it can be stress, it can be socioeconomic factors. It's very, very complex and multi-layered, and that will have different impacts all the way through your life.
Okay, so that's good in that sense that it's a sort of broad, it's a broad a kind of collection of different factors of, that may need to be explored, I suppose. So that it's slightly open-ended. And is there something? I mean, obviously the MRC has invested, very substantially in it, which is fantastic. Is there something that you would pick out that from your own experience that would be like the most surprising thing that would really make you want to do more in this? I mean, you described a really nice correlative study there. Where's the big breakthrough being made, or what sounds exciting to you?
I think quite a lot of it's exciting. I think there's a few kind of interesting kind of breakout kind of areas. I mean, obviously the microbiome and the interactions with the immune system is probably one that people are most familiar with, particularly I would say in Oxford. There's been some really wonderful work there. The fact of the kind of environmental factors like pollution is probably a bit newer to people, but there's some really fabulous studies that have been done that kind of are pointing towards how in kind of at a population level you start to see changes in the kind of epigenetic changes that are potentially affecting immune function, and it is probably these are the types of things that might be very, very important in sort of dictating whether or not you're more susceptible to some of these chronic conditions. There's also some really beautiful model work that's being done. So there's this sort of sets of experiments that have been done asking questions about lab mice. So immunologists use a lot of mouse models, but the lab mouse model is relatively simplistic. We keep it in a very restricted environment. So people at Andrea Graham and States have been asking questions about, well, what happens if we take those lab models and we put them into a wild environment? And we start kind of mixing up and we look at the different genetic types of those models. And she was able to show that some factors were very, very heavily, so the kind of in sort of makeup of our cells was very influenced by the environment. But actually some of the things like the cytokine responses, for example, interferon gamma response, was more dictated by genetics. But if you switch those lab mice into a natural environment, you could start to kind of mitigate some of those effects. So it shows you just how complex it is, and all the different types of systems that we need to sort of try and unpick to understand this. So I think it's a really exciting time to be getting involved with it.
Yeah, no, I totally agree, and I suppose in thinking one of your papers, you point out that as immunologists, we like to kind of as scientists in general, I guess, lab scientists who try and minimize variability. So you've got all these very reductionist models, and inherent in all of this is you have to kind of have this slightly dirty system that's what you're trying to study. So it seems like a really novel way to approach the science as well as the sort of the broader impact. Thanks. So, beyond the kind of subject matter, if you think about the MOXIe and then the core grant, what do you think is going to, in terms of ethos and approach, what's it doing differently, do you think, than before?
I think we're doing a few things differently. So one of the things that I am quite excited about is the way that we're really thinking about research careers. I think that's a kind of really important thing. So we know that you get amazing postdoctoral fellows in the lab, but that's a very challenging career because by its nature, it's usually externally funded. It can be very, very short term. So one of the things we're trying is kind of more of a long-term postdoctoral role where the postdocs are going to transfer through different projects. And we hope that by trialing this can be a way that we can start influencing the sector and really starting to support these young scientists in their career and to stay in that career if that's what they want to do, if they want to be a bit more kind of bench focused. We're also looking at kind of ways that we can diversify and help bring in people who perhaps don't have those opportunities to get research experience and get on that PhD track. So, looking at internships and things like that. So there's a few things that we want to try and make sure that we get that kind of set of diverse voices, but we also support people through all stages of the career journey. So that's just one of the ways I think that we're maybe trying to disrupt the system a little bit.
No, that sounds brilliant. I mean, that's one of the kind of real issues, isn't it? It's like career progression, stability equity and so forth, all of these things. So that, I mean, it needs disruption, I'm sure. That's great. And what about the blend of kind of approaches to science with, obviously some of it's going to be human studies, clinical type things, some of it's mouse work in and then you've got the sort of more of a data science and perhaps environmental science element to it. How's that all going to be blended, do you think?
So I'm really excited actually to see the way that it's shaping. So the way that we've separated, but they're all overflowing, we're all talking to each other, so we've put them into three research pillars. So the first research pillar is very data driven, as you said. So for an exemplar project from that, for example, is looking at some of the data from the Human Biobank and looking at how we can link some of that data to environmental data and sort of try and understand at that kind of population level what's going on and ensure that the data is safe. We're also looking at different ways that we can look at kind of complex data sets, like some of the cell atlases that we're trying to build. So there's some really interesting things developing for that. And then you move into RP2, and RP2 is it, research pillar two, sorry. It's very much the kind of mechanistic and experimental side. So that's kind of where a lot of immunologists probably comfortably will sit. That's looking at your kind of model systems and things, but we're making sure that that will feed back into the data side, or it will inform the research pillar three, which is the very much the experimental human kind of data side. So working with human patients, I mean, patients are humans, obviously. Not my best phrasing there, but working with patients. So, for example, doing pollution exposures in healthy people and re-challenges. So, what happens if somebody's been exposed to pollution and then they're exposed to a virus? And again, that will feed back into the data pillar as well. So they're all very integrated, informing each other, and we're having quite an open way of discussing these. So we have quite open meetings where people can come and join and find out what's going on and find out how they can contribute. But you're learning all the time from how to do those different approaches, and I think that's what's so exciting.
Yeah, great. No, I think it's really a challenge to get so many people who already, got their own ideas, but to get them to kind of really work together. But that, again, getting people out of their own comfort zone, I suppose, is really important. So one of the things that the MRC and other organizations are very keen we do is move away from preclinical animal models and use different approaches. So how is MOXIe and the core addressing that? There's plenty of opportunity.
There's a few ways that we're addressing that, because our work doesn't rely on any one kind of model system. So one of the things that we can do in Manchester, and obviously you can do in Oxford in a slightly different way, is we can do human challenge work, which is really important. We've got a kind of system. We've got like a little van where we can do things like light fires or kind of set off a little kind of cooking fire and cook some bacon or something, and we can extract the kind of the fumes that come off that, the kind of particles that come off that, and we can expose it to people in real time, and then very quickly analyze their responses. So look at changes, for example, in their blood. So we can see changes in the blood very, very quickly after exposure, and you can do more challenging experiments beyond that. And obviously in Oxford, you can do the primary viral exposures again in human challenge models. So that's one of the types of approaches that we're doing, and we can then also take samples from those challenge models and culture them. And we're doing a lot looking at different types of culture models. So really trying to build the complexity of the models all the way through from kind of stem cell organoid kind of models through to kind of using cell culture models, using cell lines, but different combinations of cell lines, and for example, air liquid interface, where we again can expose them directly to those primary sources. And always we're looking at that kind of the in silico data that the research pillar one is giving us, and kind of always kind of comparing, are these kind of relevant? Are these biological? Are these kind of valid? So there's quite a lot of ways that we're doing it. And obviously there'll be modeling opportunities through all the data sets that we're generating in research pillar one, and hypothesis generating kind of ideas that will come from that too.
That sounds fantastic. And I guess one of the nice things is that because it's a long grant, there's plenty of time to kind of iterate on this, and these innovations then could become really solid platforms for the future.
Absolutely. And I think that's going to be nodal. And we're also learning, Oxford and Manchester, we're learning from each other. And I think that's going to be exciting because there's strengths in both institutions, and that's going to, really supercharge what we can do.
Great. Can I ask a bit about climate change? Because I know from what you've written, that's kind of very close to your heart, the kind of all the impacts. And where does that fit in your view, with MOXIe and the core?
I think it fits in absolutely beautifully. The most obvious one that always will sort of leap to mind is that the pollution and climate change are kind of intimately linked, because the factors that drive up climate change are often the factors that are the most polluting. So we see this kind of complex interlinking at the very, very outset. But then we know that factors that occur as a consequence of climate change, such as enhanced heat or changes in humidity, are going to have an effect then on how that our immune response is able to respond to those stressors, whether it be pollution or whether it be stresses like infection. And in terms of the infection challenges, I think it's going to be bringing in a lot of novel challenges, but also thinking about some of the threats that perhaps we don't necessarily expect to get in parts of the world. So, we're seeing lots of vector-borne diseases, so things that are spread by some of the different mosquito species like Aedes and Anopheles going that are able to kind of thrive in other countries. And that is because the life cycles are able to, they're able to survive because it's warmer and it's wetter, and that this kind of favors it. But we also have to understand whether the life cycles are going to be shorter, and whether we're going to get more fecundity, so we're going to get more mosquitoes, more viruses. I think, yeah, it's very intimately interlinked. There's a lot of scientific questions that we need to address, and we need to address quite urgently. And MOXIe is definitely one of the approaches that we can do it, and the other kind of is thinking about this sort of eco-immunology kind of approach.
Yeah, perhaps you could just elaborate on that last one a little bit. What's the kind of say best definition of that, and what does it encompass?
With eco-immunology, you're really taking a couple of different kind of frameworks. So the way that we approach things in immunology, and then the way that we well, not me, but ecologists approach things, and the kind of tools that we use, so that you can put those together and ask about how these complex ecological variables will then affect an immune response. So it's, so you could say, how's temperature affecting the immune response? So there's a lot of tools that people studying ecology and complex systems have that we perhaps don't yet use in immunology. But it's also thinking about the way that we set up our biological questions. So I gave an example at the start, we were chatting about the sorts of experiments Andrea Graham's doing, where she's taking lab models and she's growing them, nurturing them in the wild environment. Another approach is something that Professor Catherine Else is doing in Manchester. So she's part of the MOXIe community. So she's looking at wild mice on the Isle of May and kind of studying them longitudinally. And she's also doing things like she can do, for example, treat them with antibodies or treat them with cytokines. and then capture them in the wild and look at the kind of the consequences on natural infections. So there's a few really interesting ways that we can think about kind of studying biology through that eco-immunology lens.
Great, that sounds good. And it sort of somewhere blends into the One Health agenda, I think, at a certain point. So thinking about global health issues in not just a completely human focused way. Okay, so that's all sounds really positive. Are there any kind of challenges that you can see ahead that we're going to need to really overcome?
There's always challenges,
Yes.
isn't there? I think some of the immediate challenges is developing that common language so that we can work across these different kind of communities. So, atmospheric scientists talking to immunologists, talking to microbiologists, talking to ecologists. We need to develop that kind of commonality so that we're all on the same page and we're all able to kind of bring something to the piece. When we're able to do that, it's really, really powerful because you can't look at the questions around climate change or, the exposome without having that multidisciplinary approach. We also need to think about how and the opportunities that we have in looking at all the data. We're going to be getting really, really complex, large data sets. So ensuring that we hold those appropriately, ensuring that they're safe, but also ensuring that we're able to access them. And also it's kind of future-proof. If you're designing a study now, are we thinking of sort of in broad enough terms so that people in 5 years' time can go back to that date and say, oh, we've got the right kind of information. So, if we're doing patient work, have we been collecting the right samples? Have we been collecting the right questions? So I think that there's a few things. We're trying to kind of wrinkle those out now so that we can provide this platform that's going to last for years and support lots and lots of multidisciplinary research questions. So yeah,
Yeah, and
it's
I can see that sort of future-proofing it is really critical, isn't it? Because it's a long grant, even initially, and potential to kind of pursue it over 14 years. It's really got to be, if you imagine 14 years back, what our databases and things look like, we just need to kind of be really prepared. That's really interesting. And I got one more question for you, which sounds like an interview question, but you've already got the money. So, but I think I can ask you because, this is something that I know you think about. So, what is likely to be the kind of big hit in terms of policy or, impact from this? Or what are they? And not just one thing, but, it's obviously we can answer a lot of important scientific questions, get mechanism and really get insight into these much more complicated systems. But where can you see it sort of going, in terms of changing practice and policy?
I think there's a few ways that we can go. I mean, one of the things is, can we identify common pathways that we see in, for example, in response to a pollution exposure as we would in a viral exposure? So does that mean that we could repurpose drugs and get treatments out to patients much more quickly? Can we identify new targets for developing those other treatments down the line, or better ways to kind of monitor people and kind of predict when they're not going to do so well? There's some really interesting work around that and thinking about what factors are associated with kind of markers of damage that are less invasive than perhaps looking in a piece of tissue. And I guess the other thing is, because we'll have a patient panel and because we're working with a variety of public partners all the way through this, how can we make sure that we're turning what we're doing in the labs into actions that are having real differences for our patients and our communities? So we're very much keeping that in mind. And it might be just as small as getting a few more traffic crossings being put in to help people access green spaces, be more active, and reduce their pollution exposure. But that still is making a difference.
Yeah, that's think local at global, I guess. So yeah, and I can see all of that. But having an evidence base that a powerful one, with that and all of the context would be very important. So no, that sounds really good. So well, this is supposed to be kind of partly going out for World Immunology Day. So that's the great thing to celebrate. And we'll attach, some of your work And I think a recent interview that you've given on your career with the podcast. So thank you ever so much for joining us today. And I look forward to all the successes of Moxie in the future.
So do I. Thank you very much for inviting me.